Hey everybody, welcome to Code Chat. My name is Jeremy Foster, aka Code Foster, and you can find me online, as you probably know by now, at codefoster.com or on Twitter at Code Foster. I encourage you to follow me there so you can see what's going on in the Pacific Northwest and hopefully around the world as much as I can cover it. Yep. I'm joined today by Olivier Block. Olivier, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great.
Awesome.
I'm a bit tired, but that's fine.
Yeah, that's kind of the nature, right?
We're at these big events, BZ, sessions, booth.
Can you tell everybody where we're at?
We're at OSCOM, which is the open source conference that happens yearly at Portland.
Okay.
And we have 3,000-4,000 developers coming from around the world.
Why does Portland get OSCOM?
There's a huge, you know, it's not just about hipsters. we have a lot of them here. But there's a big, huge open source developer community here in Portland. I think it's kind of a historic thing. It's been created here and grew from here. And that's a very fun event, not like any other one I've went to.
Does this feel like the open source Mecca, or do you feel like there are other places in the country that are...
So, it feels like it.
Yeah?
It feels like it. It feels
that's
like
cool.
that's the center of gravity of that open source
Well, if it
community.
Wasn't before, we just dubbed them the open source Mecca.
Exactly.
Okay, so you are representing not just Microsoft, but Microsoft Open Technologies, right?
Correct. I work for Microsoft Open Tech.
Okay.
And that's about, you know, wholly owned subsidiary working and bridging Microsoft and non-Microsoft world, working on open source, open standards.
Okay, so you're not, on your computer, you're not actually in the Microsoft primary domain, right?
You're
in
the tools I use, I'm on the primary domain of Microsoft. However, the tools I use on a daily basis are things that a lot of people have never heard of internally.
Yeah.
And so I'm working with PhoneGap, we're working with open frameworks, Cocos 2D, all these open source frameworks that we are bringing onto the Microsoft platform. So we're working with these communities, making sure everything works well. And I can, you know, we will talk about exactly which ones, but we have a ton of them for web developers, for gaming developers, for 3D creative developers. We are really willing to offer something where developers can just bring their code, their skill, and have it just run on Windows.
Yeah. So, do you like your job?
I love it. I mean, I've been doing that for 2 years now.
Okay.
My background is embedded.
Mm-hmm.
I used to be an embedded developer, so I'm a lot, and we'll talk about that, I'm a lot into the IoT story.
Yeah, right.
And when I joined Microsoft 8 years ago, I was to evangelize embedded, and 2 years ago, I was given the opportunity to start evangelizing for open source, right?
Yeah.
And I was like, curious, that's totally different. The embedded world is very close.
Yeah, right.
And switching to that was a blast. It was
like
giving me the opportunity to play with a lot of things, different things. And that extends now to the cloud also. We have Doug and other people in my team were covering the cloud, but with IoT, I'm happy to actually start working a bit on the cloud too.
Well, we just talked with Doug, and that's on another show, and we talked a little bit at the high level about open technologies and things like that, but I'm hoping we can get a little bit geeky.
Yes.
We've got developers in the crowd. They love playing with the bits.
Yep.
So what do we have going on that's geeky?
Okay, so for web developers, if you're not a web developer,
you
should be. Because it's super exciting these days. There are two aspects. There's the idea of like bringing technology that are Microsoft technology to the masses. We want these technologies to be cross-platform. WinJS has been open-sourced by Microsoft Open Tech to allow developers to not just use it for Windows web apps. So WinJS, if people don't know about it, it's a graphic library. It also has some binding technologies and so on that has been designed for Windows web apps. So that was the way of bringing, you know, JavaScript development onto the Windows platform. This thing is now open-sourced and working on other platforms, so other browsers like Chrome and others. You can just build a website that has these very advanced graphical controls that has been developed, tested, and so on.
So it's not just
Windows.
A library for specific platforms, Windows platforms, but it's a library for the web.
Now it's a web technology.
Okay. I'm going to go ahead and put a link on the bottom of the screen to another Code Chat episode where I talked with Josh Williams from WinJS. So.
Exactly. And you have a website called trybuildwinjs.com.
Try.buildwinjs.com,
which is awesome.
It's really cool.
Bring it up into Chrome or Firefox, whatever your favorite browser boundaries and really verify and test the interoperability of that technology.
Yeah.
So that's work in progress, something's not working, but that's open source. Like feeling, you know, the GitHub repo with issues and you know, you can do pull requests, we accept them and so on. That's pretty cool. That's really the open way of doing things.
Yeah.
So WinJS now works for, you know, website development. It also works if you bind it with PhoneGap/Cordova, which is that cross-platform mobile technology that we're actually contributing to make it work on Windows Phone and Windows 8 at MS OpenTech. So if you combine WinJS with Cordova, you can actually have an application that has a look and feel the experience of a Windows Phone device onto an Android device or an iOS device.
Yeah,
so as a
cool.
developer, you're in the place where you can say, I can rely on a really, you know, solid technology that is like over-tested and super performant on various platforms.
Yeah.
And I'm not just saying that because it's a Microsoft technology. Like, go try it out for yourself.
Yeah, right.
It's a really nice one. And for the things that are not working well yet, you definitely want to work with the community to make things right.
Yeah.
And that's a web technology. If you don't like the black, squarey look and feel, it's CSS.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, right. Know? It's and a flexbox.
Exactly. So you do whatever you want to do.
What about how well does, if I choose to use WinJS, is it kind of exclusive? Like, I'm not going to be able to use any other JavaScript libraries?
Absolutely not.
Okay,
actually,
good.
We already have some demos on how you can bind with AngularJS, NoCal.js.
Okay.
These demos are on our websites.
Good.
So basically, you can continue using what you're using today.
What website should they go to see
so
that kind of thing?
Same thing. You can go to try to build WinJS.com. You have the links in there.
Yeah.
And you can also, you know, surf the various, there's a developer center that goes along with it. So buildwinjs.com is the other website.
Okay. Okay.
So try is a playground. Buildwinjs.com is a dev platform.
Okay. Excellent.
So that's where to go. So that, and actually that leads to something which is about cross-platform development. So WinJS cross-platform development is that new feature that is freaking cool in Visual Studio, which is called, the name is complicated, multi-device hybrid development.
Okay.
Right? Or multi-device MDD, whatever. So basically, in Visual Studio, that's the promise, and it works well. Visual Studio was one solution, one project, you can build an app for Windows Phone, Windows, Android, iOS, all from Visual Studio. It's based on Cordova, and it basically uses a JavaScript HTML5 CSS. So you code in JavaScript HTML5 CSS, you use a Cordova, the various APIs of Cordova to access the hardware and so on, the regular Cordova development.
Yeah, right.
And the thing is, like, you can then select the target being, you know, one of your Windows platforms, or Android, and you can test on the emulator on an actual device.
Wow.
Or you pick iOS, and you can, when you have a Mac hooked up over the network with a specific agent that we provide, you can actually ask for the iOS build process to be activated from Visual Studio.
Okay.
You can get your web code there. You can start the iOS emulator and run that app on the emulator.
Okay.
In terms of debugging today, you can do all your JavaScript debugging, HTML5, DOM inspection, so on in Visual Studio for now for the Windows platforms, but we are working really hard on making that work. Well, actually, we in the Visual Studio team working that are making that happen for Android, for iOS. The idea is that we want to be able to not only have you test things on Windows and then, you know, hey, pray for it to work on the other browsers,
yeah, right,
and the other, you know, web views in the other platforms.
Yeah.
We really want to go further and give you the same development tools to work for Android and for iOS at the end of the day.
Okay.
So that's open source, once again. So that means, like, we can get issues in, you know, feature requests, pull requests, something like that.
And there's a lot of energy on the GitHub repo for WinJS. There's a lot of questions.
Yeah,
WinJS one
is very active.
Yeah,
we expect
great.
The MDD one to be as active as soon as you know, the thing is in preview right now.
Okay.
It's growing.
Yeah.
And we are, you know, learning in the process.
Yeah.
But that's pretty cool.
That's excellent.
That's a really nice feature. Another question you might have, like, related to that. I'm
sure.
Asking questions.
That's great. No, that's great. Yeah. Go ahead and interview.
I'm really job. So when it comes to developing with JavaScript on devices, right, you're hosted on a web browser on Windows platform, you run on Windows Windows web apps.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that's the difference. iOS, Android, WebView, you're in a web context.
Contained. You're
contained.
Mm-hmm.
But you're in a web context, so your code executes like if it was in a browser.
Mm-hmm.
So everything you do for a website works in that context. Even though it's an app on the device, it's like if it was a browser that actually renders. On Windows 8.1 and on Windows Phone 8.1, you have that model of Windows web apps.
Yeah.
You basically run JavaScript HTML5 directly on the app platform. Yeah. You don't need a web browser to wrap it up, right? That's perfect. You have that layer in addition.
And does Cordova abstract that for me so that whenever I'm, say, I'm going to ask for my location by way of geolocation, or maybe I'm going to get a snap a picture from the camera, Cordova knows that it's in iOS, and so it's going to need to go through the Cordova channels, but now it's on Windows or Windows Phone, and it can just talk to that API directly.
So here's the difference in the way Cordova is implemented on the two platforms, on the various platforms. Windows Phone 7 is like iOS Android, actually, in terms of support. Windows Phone 8 also. Windows Phone 8.1 is the new one that is coming. Windows 8.1 and 8 have been developed with the Windows web app structure. So let's put it like that. For these other platforms, what Cordova does, it basically wraps the web view control and is able to capture the calls from the JavaScript code, ask the OS about the resources and respond back into
with the
web
result.
View control with the result.
Yeah.
So imagine you have that overhead of having to capture the event from the JavaScript code, get out of the web view control, do something in native code, and then re-inject that.
Yeah. Yeah.
In Windows, you basically have the WinRT APIs, right, that allow your JavaScript code to access the OS resources. So we just basically, the Cordova implementation exposes the Cordova API, calls the WinRT API directly, no need to play around with events and so on, and then sends a response back. So basically it's just a one-to-one mapping of the
Cordova
API.
It's a broad surface area, right?
Yeah. So it's pretty cool, works pretty well. Here's the caveat. So there's a security model. You're in JavaScript, you can do whatever you want. So the Windows platform, it's a great language, I love it too. Very permissive.
Yeah.
But you're in a context where that application can be purchased by anyone in the store, or just like you can get for free if you're the kind of like giving your app for free, or you have ads, whatever the model you choose. But in a nutshell, the final user doesn't really know what he's doing. And if you have a situation where you allow in your app to download dynamic content, for example, and that has been hacked, that machine is at risk.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a lot of security things that have been that are imposed by the Windows app platform in order to make sure that app is not putting the final user at risk.
Yeah, yeah.
And that means that if you bring any random JavaScript framework to build a Windows web app, you might encounter the case where you're doing that in your JavaScript code for a website, and Visual Studio will flag that as unsafe.
Yeah.
And won't allow you to go through certification and have an app running on Windows.
Yeah.
We found a way working with the Windows team to actually make that a bit more flexible using a shim, which is called the Dynamic Content Shim for Windows application.
Okay.
And the idea is like to kind of like make these restrictions less strict and less hard on the developer.
Developer
can bring AngularJS, it can bring KnockoutJS, it can bring these frameworks, and they will just work using that shim in their application. So most of these security issues are covered with that shim.
Does that shim have to have the recognition of these specific platforms? Does it have to know about how Angular works?
No, it doesn't need to know how these framework work. So you can actually have other JavaScript framework used with that shim here.
Mm-hmm.
So that shim, that's another disclaimer. This thing is a temporary thing. Hopefully, Windows will have some way of accepting all these JavaScript framework to just work.
Yeah.
That's the goal. As a short-term solution, that shim is great for you to not have to think about changing your code to comply with it. You can do that. I mean, we enabled, MSNBC worked on enabling jQuery on Windows web apps.
Yeah.
We also have contributions pending into AngularJS to make it just work.
Yeah.
AngularJS is a bit in bankruptcy in terms of pull requests, so they're just like taking time to take the pull requests, and I'm just like, I'm with them on that. Like, they have like a huge list like that, things they have to look into.
It's a good problem
and the guys have something else to do also at Google. Anyways, we definitely want to help the guys down there. And these contributions are pending in Angular. But the thing is, like, why would we ask like all the JavaScript developers and the framework developers to change their code?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make sense. It doesn't go with our philosophy of saying, hey, keep your skills in code and bring it here.
Yeah.
So that's what the shim is about. Just like bring the code, make it run on Windows web apps. You will still get that security thing because we know exactly what needs to be done on that shim. You could do that yourself. You can look at the code, inject that code into your JavaScript library so that it just works.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, if you have that shim working, just most use it, contribute back to it.
And once again, the name of that shim is the Dynamic...
Another nice name. Dynamic Content Shim for Windows Applications.
Okay.
So all of these things we're just talking now, I published a blog post yesterday
about Oscon
and what we're doing, and I have all the links to all these things.
Excellent. Right? Okay, that'll be really helpful.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so we've been talking about software.
Yes.
What about hardware? There's got to be two sides, right?
That's my thing, right? IoT, Internet of Things. I think it's Intel, someone else actually is calling that the Internet of Everything. I love it. So the idea is really to have these smart connected devices, sensors, whatnot, connected to the cloud to accrue to some bigger scenario. In that area, actually, we have the cloud. We haven't had Windows Embedded for years. Windows Embedded goes like from really tiny little real-time sensors and robotics and so on, all the way up to
cars,
big Windows.
Cars and coffee machines.
Coffee machines take some, just for the fun of it. But and that was a model where it was a royalty base and so on. There is a new program that has just been announced called... I'm bad with names. It's the Windows Developer Program for IoT. That's what the name is.
Okay.
WindowsOnDevice.com. OnDevices.com. And you can see the link here. So this WindowsOnDevices.com thing is about allowing developers to build IoT apps for now just on the Intel Galileo board, which is an Arduino-compatible hardware, running Windows by using Visual Studio Express. So the board is $45. Like the Intel Galileo one. The OS is free. The Visual Studio Development Toolkit is free.
Wait a minute. Let me keep your place. But, we made this announcement that if you have a device with a screen less than 9 inches, then Windows doesn't have the license is free.
Yep.
What about if you don't have a screen?
Well, it's free.
That's pretty interesting.
With the Windows program, device thingy for IoT, that's free too.
Wow.
That's free as is. So you have that specific build for the Intel Galileo. There's going to be more hardware kits coming in the future based on the interest and so on. For now, we are like basically overwhelmed by the success of that thing. The Intel Galileos are growing by hundreds each week over the summer. I hope we'll be able to ship to all those who signed up for that program.
Where's the best place to get one?
And now WindowsOnDevices.com, right?
Oh,
that's
okay.
Where you can pre-order one.
Oh, cool.
And the actual image and so on, we have that there's a GitHub website to get all the information. That's github.com/ms-iot.
Okay.
And this one actually has not only information, but also has the source code for something which is very interesting. If you are a maker, if you are an Arduino developer, you would be like, hey, okay, scratch in my head. Usually it's Linux running on Arduino board.
Yeah, right.
And when I want to put these nice hardware extension, what we call Shield, Arduino Shield, which are pin compatible with each other. How do I do that in Windows? Here is the answer. Just bring your hardware shield on the Intel Galileo, get the library code, which is C++, drop it in Visual Studio, build, run.
Wow, that's great.
The reason why it works, just works, is that, developers, we might have some things to change. little tiny things.
But if there wasn't, you'd be bored.
Exactly, that would be funny. So basically, we implemented that programming language that has been designed to talk to the Arduino shields. It's called wiring, and you can find information on their website. It's an open source project. So we implemented the exact same API, the wiring one, and we will comply with whatever changes wiring is applying to that API to make sure that it still works in the future. So that thing is open source also, as a matter of fact. Everything is open
turns
source.
Turns out.
It turns out.
Seems like we're at an open source conference.
Exactly. That's wiring API implementation allows the C++ code running on Windows to talk to the Arduino board using the exact same library, because the libraries know wiring APIs, right? There's C++ they compile. They talk through the wiring API to the hardware.
Okay.
So now you have that wiring implementation running on Windows that you get as part of the build here. Just bring your library code in your app, and you can just talk to your weather shield, MP3 shield, whatever shields Arduino guys are building.
That's pretty interesting. It opens up a big world. What kinds of applications do you have? Have you played with? Have you seen? Do you have some good ideas?
So there are like two main kinds. One is like fun, hobbyist. We have a big piano here that the IoT guys built for build.
Okay.
And I was like, can I steal that and go to OSCON? And she's like, yeah, sure. Boom. And I got these two huge Pelican cases and this little tiny board, right? I was
that
like,
runs
for
the whole thing.
That?
Yeah.
For that little two big cases? And then I saw all the big keys. I've got like four accordion with them. It's huge. It's fun. You can jump on that and play piano. Everything controlled with a small, tiny device. It's just a set of sensors and a set of lights you control using GPIOs. It's really simple and simple. And then you have that MP3 shield we use actually to output audio.
Okay.
It's just MP3 files.
Yeah.
We basically have MP3 file in our app, and just says play. That's the API you have to call, and that's it. So it's limit boring simple.
Yeah.
But you can imagine tons of things can do that.
Right.
That thing can play automatically and so on. That's funny.
Yeah.
So these are the kind of projects that are like, I would say, called enthusiast makers. They can really have fun with that.
Mm-hmm.
The other ones I'm seeing is industrial. So we're already working with different, you know, universities, industrial partners, because they're looking at that saying, okay, I know Windows. Now I'm interested, Windows on these little tiny devices. So whether to control the sensor, whether to act as a gateway to connect all these sensors into, you know, the cloud, then, you know, using Azure or something else, I can do all my data analytics, I can do all my BI on that data and make decisions to do, you know, preventive maintenance, something like that. I've got a really nice scenario, not naming anyone, but we are working with an industrial automation customer. And the idea is like, when you have all these engines that are controlled by and verified by sensors on, let's say, an articulated arm on the factory floor, this thing has like tons of sensors, tons of little motors to articulate that thing.
Yeah.
And usually these little motors are PWM driven. So you basically inject a PWM signal to reach a certain speed that actually gives a certain angle you want to reach. Time, all the magnets and so on in the engine just wear out, which that's normal. That has a lifespan that is known. The thing is, like, you don't really know when it's going to happen, because the variation of that intensity you have to put into the signal to get to the exact angle you want is varying so in such a little way, and changes over time depending on the temperature in the room and things like that. So if you want to notice that something is changing and that in 10 days that model will fail before it fails, you have to analyze a huge amount of data.
Yeah.
A lot.
Because you have to go back in time.
So here's the thing. Whether you attach like a big server, there's lots of storage to each of these robot arm controllers, which is, I can tell you, not possible on these factory floors.
Mm-hmm.
Or you find a solution to have that data collected somewhere and analyzed somewhere. Have that, do that in the cloud. And do that in a smart way with all our big data technologies and machine learning technologies and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So all these data can be analyzed up there. And then automatically you can have an alarm triggered. Say, and actually, even more than that, you can imagine a scenario where the maintenance guy is scheduled for a change at a time where the factory is on the lower speed.
Yeah,
so that
right.
you're not even cutting the line,
yeah, right?
Because the interruption of such an articulated
is massively expensive.
It's super expensive. It's by the million a day.
Yeah, right.
I mean, it's something crazy.
I used to work at Boeing on the 787
there
project.
There you go. And so if one of these motors fails during production, it's a disaster. Especially because, you know, it's going to take time. Once it's failed, it's even harder to fix because it might have damaged other things around.
Yeah.
And then you have to restart the whole thing.
Yeah.
Versus, you know, scheduling the guy automatically through Azure.
Yeah.
You know, get the alert, say that motor needs to be changed by the next 10 days, right? And then the guy is scheduled, comes in the low time, low activity time, goes change that, done, right? And that actually makes that company save millions.
Yeah,
potentially.
Right. So yeah, that's what we're looking for.
Using Windows on these tiny devices is very interesting because it's Windows, same core, same software. They have things about integrating that into their IT infrastructure. It's pretty straightforward. If it's about like connecting to the cloud, it's known. They have all these protocols that are supported that they might already be using, whether it's CAN on the field bus, whether it's any other things like MQTT, AMQP, CoAP, and you name it, to connect to the cloud. These devices running Windows can definitely help them a lot because the development, you know, life cycle and timing to get to where you have an actual gateway device running is short.
Yeah, right.
They know it, and so they're very happy with that. And it's free.
Yeah. And it's got the backing and the security models and stuff you've come to expect
from them. And there's another aspect of that, which is these industrials, they don't go for a year or two. Mm-hmm. That device has to be maintained for 10, 15 years. Mm-hmm. And there's not a lot of companies building this kind of software for this kind of hardware that will warranty maintenance for that for years.
Yeah.
So when we say it's free, that doesn't mean there's no support and maintenance for that. That's super important.
Yeah.
The model is not, you know, public yet. It needs to be also worked out with these customers and partners. And we need to figure out exactly how it looks like. But at the end of the day, the idea is like, it's Microsoft. We're here to stay.
Yeah, yeah.
And so as an industry, you can definitely count on Windows on device.
That seems like the sweet spot, you know, the staying power of Microsoft and the Windows platform and the agility and just the ability to iterate and innovate of open source technologies and open platforms.
And then you have that notion of, we're talking about devices, but once again, that IoT scenario, I started to talk about it, is a lot about the cloud. Mm-hmm. That data cannot be analyzed on these little tiny devices that don't have a hard drive, that are low memory, low performance.
You don't want that to happen there.
You don't want it, you can't.
Yeah.
And then you have that idea that you can transfer that data up there. So you have some protocols that are used very much by these hardware manufacturers that we start implementing in Service Bus and other of our communication stacks in Azure so that they don't even have to change anything on their side. Mm-hmm. It should be REST is fine, but these tiny devices, even if it's a gateway, might not be talking HTTP REST, might not be able to add some SSS on top to add some security.
Right.
So the idea is that these protocols that are used, MQTT and CoAP and other ones like what's that one, OPC. So these things actually that the industry is using today, we want to support them on our communication brokers for Azure. So that's what we're implementing, and MS OpenTech is helping the Azure team with that.
Yeah.
And then in the back, you have various options. Like Azure offers a lot of options. ISS, the Intelligent System Services, is a new offer which is in public preview now. It allows you to have data analytics, BI, with a nice dashboard, like turnkey.
Yeah.
You don't have to do anything. Just like hook up your devices that have agents running on them, and the agents are actually developed by Microsoft IoT Group, by MS OpenTech for some of the open source platform down there, so Ubuntu and others. Once you have these agents running, these devices connect to ISS, and you get a dashboard you can configure to get alerts on how things are going. You can configure the type of data treatment you want, and so on. That's a really neat thing. And you also have the option to say, that ISS uses a bunch of different services in Azure. It's a black box, so you might be a customer that is good with that. But on the other hand, you might be a bigger customer that has bigger needs and more detailed needs. Then go ahead, use machine learning, use Hadoop on Azure, use things like NRT, near real-time type of technology or event-driven eventing on Azure. Use all of these services on Azure to build your solution for IoT.
Yeah,
so that's the overall idea. You have a huge flexibility, lots of services, lots of things running on devices, working with your protocols, working with your hardware. What are you waiting for?
Well, there's a plethora of technologies and platforms and all kinds of stuff. Is there anything else you want to add before we close it up?
I think, read the blogs, and
I think we set a record for the number of links that have popped up from the bottom of the screen in this episode of Code Chat. So
awesome. Great. And you can find me at oblock, O-B-L-O-C-H on Twitter.
Okay.
And
excellent. All right, we'll talk more.
Well, thanks, Jeremy.
Yeah, nice chat. Thanks for joining us on Code Chat today. See you next time.
Good.
Good stuff. Boy, that's going to be a fun one. That's going to be really good.
That's a lot of things.
Yeah, there is. There's